show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's we're still in the midst of the off season here, just still trying to get it going. So we've got just some odds and ends to kind of keep you abreast of the situation as we move closer and closer to the true hot stove season. Before we get into those odds and ends, introductions, of course. I am Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, is the man who is never an odd and is never at an end, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing? I don't know if that made sense, but I tried to tie it in to the overall topic there. Regardless, how are you doing? It's very, very abrasively cold these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't like last Saturday I was out in my T-shirt and it was like 60 degrees. And then Sunday we have 6 inches of snow. Mm-hmm. Man, come on. At least ease me into it
right.
a bit, you know?
And stop teasing. Like, if you're in, go yeah, in. You know, don't give this idea that, hey, it might be – might have some mild days this winter. No, it's just snow. Yeah, that snow cut my trip home to see family short by a day, so I had to get headed back on Saturday instead of Sunday, and it was a good decision.
Very good decision.
Sunday was nope. So that was kind of a bummer, but, you know, that's how it goes. Yeah, it's cold. I hate, as long as I don't have anywhere to go, I don't mind snow, but I still had to go to work on Monday, so
oof,
it's like
that's rough.
I'm deemed essential by my building, which, great, thanks.
Yes,
everybody was deemed essential though, so it's not like I'm special. It's just that they're like, "Yep, you're all coming in." Well, great, thanks.
We're open, but I took I took that day off. I was like, "Nope, I'm not coming in." My daughter's school was closed, and we had to. So I was just like, "Ah, screw it. I'm just going to stay home."
Yeah. I don't blame you.
I felt good about it.
It's the way to go.
So anyway, speaking of things to feel good about, well, that was an attempt at a segue. I don't know if there's necessarily.
That's a weird segue considering what we agreed to start
with.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's necessarily. It was an attempted segue because normally I could. It seems like an easy one, but I don't know if we'll feel good about these or not. We'll see. Let's find out. So first things first, recent news, at least since in between when we last recorded and now, the Royals have hired Mike Matheny as the special assistant vice chairman, admiral, second principal to the assistant head coach.
Twice removed.
Yeah. Something, I don't know, some sort of trumped up title to allow him to come probably for contractual reasons, whatever. But I think the general consensus around this decision is that Mike Matheny becomes essentially the manager in waiting for the Kansas City Royals. So given that, we talked about this a little bit before the show in terms of Ned's contract. He's got this year and that's it for him. So it could be as early as 2020 that we're looking at Mike Matheny as the Royals manager. So just right off the bat, when you hear that, when you heard the news, because my instant thought was, well, he's going to be the next manager. So I assume yours was the same. So when you see that, you hear that, what were your just immediate thoughts?
Well, even like last summer when he got fired by the Cardinals, it was like the immediate thought was, oh, he's going to end up on the Royals somehow. Mm-hmm. Because he fits the pro. He's a former catcher. He's the kind of old schoolish baseball guy. He's kind of the the rah-rah field general type. He's, you know, for Dayton Moore's kind of got a leaning towards guys who have some kind of faith and are openly express it, you know, for whatever that's worth. And Matheny's certainly in that camp. So, yeah, I was not surprised that I think a couple weeks ago there were rumblings that, oh, they're talking to him. And it was like, yeah, just get it over with. We know you're going to bring him on somehow. So he's like special assistant to the general manager. He's supposed to be focusing on development, but you know, this is the same kind of job that Ned Yost had in 2010 at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. And by the end of May, he was the manager replacing Trey Hillman. I don't think Ned Yost is going to get fired because he's, you know, if he wasn't going to get fired in 2017 or 2016 even for some poor stretches of play, sure as heck wasn't going to happen now.
No.
Now they're definitely clearly in a rebuild. So, but we also thought that last year was, you know, he might retire after Eric Hosmer and Lorenzo Cain took off, and he went one more year, and then they've got him through 2019. So he might just be going year by year. But yeah, it does seem like Matheny's he fits the profile for a guy who might get another shot at a managerial job. He's only 47 years old. You know, he never had a losing season in St. Louis. Even when he got fired, he was 47-46. But like the issue with him became like bullpen management. He's pretty obstinate about a lot of things, and he didn't really get along very well towards the end with Yadier Molina. So it's like, for a lot of the things that Ned Yost gets dinged on, like bullpen management and being stubborn, things that I think 95% of big league managers or any head coach, manager, what have you, in any professional sport would probably be fairly labeled. Mm-hmm. You know, that's I think the Matheny's maybe a little farther along on those things. And so that's kind of the reputation he brings. So, yeah, if people don't like Ned Yost, they're not going to like Matheny much more. That being said, it probably isn't, you know, I think we've kind of mentioned at some time that the manager isn't that big of a deal. But I think for things like clubhouse morale, it can be really important. And I think for that, Ned Yost was probably the right guy in the end when, you know, it's all said and done about bringing up those Royals and bringing them up from prospects into all-stars, into champions. And so if you were to jump from Yost to Matheny carries some baggage with him. And he's already shown that even in a winning clubhouse, things went sour. And so you think of what he might do in front of a rebuild if, you know, as we kind of think, he would take over 2020. You know, how would that work? That doesn't seem like a really good recipe to me. So, yeah, as soon as they hired him, it was like, oh, that's your next manager. We've kind of been wondering who would take over for Ned when the time came. And, boy, he sure seems like he's got the resume all ready to go. But, I mean, we'll see. Jeffrey Flanagan doesn't seem skeptical that that's going to be the case. You know, but Things can change quickly. So I would still say he's the odds-on favorite. If I were to place a bet, he definitely would have the odds in his favor. Ultimately, maybe he doesn't become a manager, but I sure think that seems like, you know, where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, that was, as soon as I saw that, I can't remember what I was doing. I think I had just, I can't remember what I was doing when I got the notification on my phone that they had signed him, but that was my immediate thought. It's like, well, I guess we know who the next manager is going to be. I actually, when I first saw it, yep, and I just glanced down and saw Mike Matheny and Royals, I was like, oh, I guess Ned Yost has decided he's going to retire and the Royals hired Matheny. And then I saw it was an assistant role. So I was like, well, they're just going to be grooming him type of a thing. I do agree that the inevitability of this hire seemed too much for the Royals to resist. But it's, yeah, I don't remember the, I mean, it's kind of weird when you think about, like, the Cardinals fans were, they weren't really happy with Tony La Russa all the time, and he won two World Series. So it's hard to really judge from them how happy they are, like how true it is. But they weren't all that happy with Matheny. It didn't seem like from the start. I mean, I think they liked initially the hire just because he had the St. Louis connection as a player, but past that, I don't think that they enjoyed him too much as from his actual managerial style. And yes, just as you said, I anticipate that to carry over into Kansas City, unfortunately. But I don't know. I mean, he obviously wore kind of thin with the Cardinals. And it's hard to tell, like, what exactly, especially in baseball, you know, how much, like, you, I think the way we've talked about it before, the way we've kind of approached it is more or less that the manager in baseball has probably the least amount of impact of all, you know, head coaches, managers in any other sport. So that being said, it's always hard to tell, you know, what exactly role they play in success, but you know, he did lead the Cardinals to a World Series. So, you know, they didn't win it, but they were there. And so, you know, I mean, there's something for that. You know, the Cardinals have done an incredible job of just consistently churning out a roster that's competitive to very, very good. And 2013, in his second year, they made it to the World Series, lost to the Boston Red Sox. But when we were talking about topics for the show, we were talking about it. My hope was kind of a reverse Whitey Herzog situation, where, you know, he went from the Royals to the Cardinals, and then won a World Series with the Cardinals just a couple of years later. So that'd be kind of cool if that happened here. I don't know if it will, but I'll never say never, given I said that the Royals would never win a World Series with Ned Yost as manager, and look where we are now, talking about building him a statue. So who knows? you never know when it comes to these sorts of things. But there are worse hires they could have made, surely. Assuming Matheny does end up becoming the manager, you know, there are worse things that could happen, but they're also better. So
yeah, I do think they would have other options. I mean, Jason Kendall has kind of been in that assumed manager and waiting position for a number of years, and he's been in the organization ever since, you know, he retired as a Royal. So he's one name. Pedro Grifol has you know, kind of bounced around in roles in that clubhouse, and he's another guy that comes up a lot when you start talking about other managerial candidates. Seems like he might be one of those kind of, like, you know, hotshot types, like you know, even like AJ Hinch and you know, some others, where they kind of, it clicks for them, it just really works, because he has a little bit of, he's a former, you know, catching instructor, hitting instructor, was a catcher himself, and you know, but he also looks at, like, the analytical side of things, and so he will mix both elements, which I think you kind of have to do in this game. And then you have someone like Raul Baez is someone that I think last year or maybe the year before, a lot of people were kind of talking about. I was like, that'd be cool if he was the manager, because, you know, he's always had that really high regard in the clubhouse everywhere he's went. And, you know, it's kind of maybe exaggerated or legend at this point. But, you know, the speech in 2014, after the Royals lost, I think they got swept by Chicago at home or something. Yeah. And he was like, stood up in team meeting and gave a speech, and then they ended up winning 16 of 20, and sooner or later they're in the playoffs. And you know, I don't know how much that ends up mattering in 162 games, but certainly seems like he's got a lot of respect from a lot of places in the league, but in Kansas City as well. So, you know, it's not like Matheny's the only game in town. They would have options, mm-hmm. and a lot of these guys, Grafal especially, has kind of been right there with Ned the whole time. So if it's one of those things where it's like you're grooming somebody, well, they've kind of been working with Kendall and Grafal this whole time. So, you know, it's not a slam dunk that it's Matheny, but again, I would still,
yeah,
if I were putting money on it,
and
that's where I'd,
because I do think it is interesting that, you know, you bring up good points with Ibanez and Kendall. I mean, we've talked about it on the show that we kind of thought they would be, you know, pretty well in line to at least have a good chance of succeeding, and maybe they still do, but of succeeding Ned Yost. But it's really it's a little surprising that they wouldn't just kind of go down that route. But at the same time, it's also kind of not surprising because it feels like the Royals, they get to the point, specifically Dayton Moore, they want to do something bold and a little bit different from what they've done in the past. And then it gets right down to it and they just can't pull the trigger. So, like, you know, taking someone yeah. from like Jason Kendall, who as soon as he retired, they put him in the organization. They've been grooming him to be a manager. He'll be a manager somewhere, whether it's with the Royals or not. It's going to happen for him. So mm-hmm. it seemed like the Royals were wanting to be that team to give him his first shot. And yet they get close to the point where they might actually need to make that decision. It seems like they just chickened out and they're like, Matheny's out there. He's got managerial experience. Let's just hire him. Let's just get him. Let's just get him in here, you know?
Bring him
so
in.
That's what it kind of feels like a little bit to me, where they wanted to, and then they couldn't do it when it really came down to it. But we'll see what happens. You know, I guess not everyone is necessarily as convinced as we are, that's what's going to happen, but you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll find out in about a year, I guess, or not,
this time
not
next
even
year,
a year,
we could
probably
be talking about Mike Matheny's team. Who knows?
Yeah.
Moving on. Next, interesting bit of news. We have some roster moves here. Birch Smith was DFA'd recently, and the Royals, picked up and put Connor Green on the 40-man roster. So Green was a once highly regarded prospect for the Blue Jays and has, you know, kind of floundered a bit, but the Royals have picked him up, and kind of similar to some other moves they've made in recent history, could be one of those lottery things where lottery ticket type deals where you've got, okay, this is a really good, a really high ceiling for a player. They haven't reached it, haven't come close, but if they do, and you're the organization that they're in, then when that happens, then you've put yourself in a really good position where you've got a lot of control. You've got a very talented player, and you know, it's never a bad risk to take. And that's one they've taken. So what are your thoughts on that move from the Royals?
Yeah, it's the type of move that they should be doing. And we've seen them, you know, you go back to even last year, Rosel Herrera, Brian Goodwin, these types of guys where they were highly regarded prospects at other places and never really got playing time. And the Royals gave them a look, and Goodwin played well, and Rosel Herrera played really well in spots. And just a couple weeks ago, they signed Michael Ynoa, who is in that same mold of, you know, big arm, big name, big prospect, never really panned out. You know, is 23. Green is, is 27. Green is 23. You know, he's a guy who can throw in the upper 90s, can touch 100. That kind of arm is going to get some attention. But the issue is that, you know, his strikeouts aren't really that high for somebody that would throw that hard. So he's 6.8 strikeouts per 9 innings, which is odd for someone who can throw, mm-hmm. you know, triple digits. But he also only has, his walk rate is about 4.4 walks per 9 innings, which isn't awful, but when you're not striking out a bunch of guys, usually you kind of see that when you're, you know, 10.5
yeah.
strikeouts per 9 or higher. So that's kind of a discrepancy. But he doesn't give up a lot of hits. He doesn't give up a lot of home runs. either, at least in his minor league career to this point. So it's worth the flyer, and he's only, you know, 23 years old. You know, he pitched reasonably well for the Cardinals AA and AAA teams last year after being traded over there. But he's never really kind of gotten it together. And more likely than not, he'll pitch out of the bullpen most of the time. I don't even know if he'll, you know, be in line to be called up. It's just going to be one of those things where you see what he can do. And, you know, it's worth a shot. He was the 100th overall prospect going into the 2016 season, according to Baseball Prospectus. So, you know, he's in that same kind of camp of, you know, top 100 type prospect. There's a lot of talent there, but it's really a matter of getting it refined. The name you mentioned when we were kind of talking before the show is Jeremy Jeffress, who it sounds very similar. It's mm-hmm. the same kind of profile. Big arm, bad control, a lot of hype, never really panned out. Jeffress went from Milwaukee, traded to the Royals. The Royals dumped him. He went to, where'd he go? He went to the Blue Jays. I think he went to the Rangers.
Yep.
For a bit, and then ended up back. I think he bounced between the Blue Jays and Rangers a couple times, and then ended up back in Milwaukee, where he was a big, big part of their success last season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at something like that, and you can kind of see how it can come together for a player. Maybe that's in Green's future. Maybe as a Royal. Maybe it's not, but it's definitely worth taking a shot on him. There's, you know, plenty of innings to go around. There's plenty of opportunity. A lot of pitchers in the Royal system have a lot of options. You know, procedurally, guys that can, they can kind of taxi him up and down from the minor leagues. So it's not like they have to go and expose him to an extended run in the big leagues. If he struggles, they can send him down. So, yeah, it's definitely worth a shot. And, you know, it gives him an excuse to move on from Birch Smith, who never really got it going after joining the team last year from the Rule 5 draft, but, you know, worthy effort.
Yes. Speaking of which, talking about the Rule 5 draft, we got that coming up. And with that, the teams around the league have all made, you know, make corresponding 40-man moves. So essentially who they're protecting, who they're not. And the Royals have made some. Among that, Josh Staumont, Scott Blewett, and Arnaldo Hernandez have been added to the 40-man roster. So they're protected. They can't be selected in a Rule 5 draft. Now, Josh Staumont, we've talked about him a decent amount on the show. We kind of know the deal with him. Scott Blewett, we've mentioned a few times. And, you know, he's an interesting player. Arnaldo Hernandez, haven't really mentioned a ton about him. And to be honest, I don't know a ton about him. Do you know? I mean, well, I guess we'll start from the collective. When you hear those three names, personally, it's probably, you know, just because I'm not super familiar with Hernandez, that one may be a little surprising. But Blewett and Staumont, I don't know that I'm too surprised with that. You know, they seem like the Royals are pretty invested in those players and seeing if they can get something out of them. And Staumont has shown those really big flashes where we think, oh man, the Royals may really have something, and then he snaps out of it, and, you know, mm-hmm. he's walking seven guys per nine innings, and it's like, oh boy, this is not, you know, you're talking about Connor Green having the, you know, four plus walks per nine, but only striking out yeah. under seven. Well,
looks like Maddox compared
yeah,
to
I mean, Staumont is, you know, he's getting those. I think he really was at around seven walks per nine.
I think he was, yeah. And I don't have his numbers in front, but it sounds right.
And then, you know, but on the flip side, he is, you know, there is that little that expectation of getting those higher strikeout numbers. And he did have, because he would usually average, I think, around nine strikeouts per nine innings. So, you know, he was getting a lot of those strikeouts, but also just putting too many people on base was the long and the short of it. So, but the Royals are invested in thinking that something may click or they can fix something or whatever. So, not at all surprising there. And Scott Blewett has shown some flashes, not to the same extent, as well. But so what are your thoughts when you hear those three names as essentially the Royals saying, you know what, we're invested in trying to make sure these players are have all the chances to succeed in this organization.
Yeah, I think Staumont was pretty much a given. He definitely would have been someone that I would expect to get picked. Mm-hmm. He could have been called up last year to pitch a little bit towards the end of the season. I mean, just to give him an opportunity to see what he could do.
Remember, we were
but they just never did it. Yeah, kind of. And it kind of seemed like they might try it, but you know, at that time it still would have been taking a 40-man move. So that's probably the main reason why it didn't happen. But so I think you would have probably seen him, and you know, relievers are the most common Rule 5 selections. So it's no surprise that it's three pitchers. Blewett really improved his stock over the winter league season. He led the surprise team with four wins. And I know wins don't matter, but, you know, he made six starts and ended up doing well in all of them. Had a 2.49 ERA, 25.1 innings pitched, you know, almost a 3-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, and really kind of kept guys off base. Did a really good job, and you know, they often refer to the Arizona Fall League as finishing school, and I think he showed them exactly what they wanted to see, that he can go out there and have some success against some pretty good competition. And you know, they added him, and it doesn't mean that they're going to be bringing him up, it doesn't mean they're going to call him up and he's going to be the fifth starter, but it gives them that option, you know, as injuries, as fatigue, as rough stretches happen. You know, he's an option there. Probably puts him, you know, in the top three starters at Omaha. You know, gives him an opportunity to contribute there, and then you see what he might do in some sparing action in the big leagues. Hernandez is a lot more interesting in that he's kind of ended up coming out of nowhere. Not that he wasn't, like, well-regarded, but, you know, he was pitching in Wilmington last year at times, and in 2017 he was in Lexington, so he's really made a big jump from, you know, a limited amount of full season baseball. He pitched at Wilmington, pitched in Northwest Arkansas, and finished the year in Omaha, and you know, really pitched pretty well. 3.55 ERA over 58 and a third innings. Made nine starts, 10 total appearances, had two complete games there, and I think one of them was like a 90 pitch 78 strike kind of night, like just silly numbers. And you know, you add that onto an Arizona Fall League appearance where he threw over 16 innings and had a 1.1 ERA. So, you know, for what Blewett showed them, Hernandez went out and kind of made a name for himself. And according to Clint Scholes, who's seen Hernandez a lot more, because he was able to see him in Omaha a handful of times, the velocity was up. So, you know, it jumped into kind of working into the mid-90s, even into the upper 90s a little bit. So I think the Royals saw something that they wanted to, you know, get a closer look at, and this kind of puts him in a position where he probably starts the year in Omaha, and they, you know, kind of in the similar vein as Blewett, you know, they might give him a look later on. So not too surprised that they went with a bunch of pitchers. There were a lot of names that they could have kind of gone with, but you know, anytime you kind of look at some of those players that you have to protect, you have to consider the likelihood that they're going to get picked up by another team. And I think Staumont was definitely somebody that you know, they wanted to protect, that definitely I'm pretty sure would have been taken if they'd have left him out there. Someone like Blewett, you know, I could see a team taking a chance on him. Hernandez, with the way that he's kind of come out and kind of shown himself off, you know, with his performance towards the end of the year last year and over the Arizona Fall League, you know, that's someone that might get attention. And, you know, it just takes one team to think, hey, I'm gonna bring him and hide him in the back of the bullpen and see what happens. The Royals felt like they wanted to protect that. So I'm not too surprised. There are a couple names that they didn't protect that I'm mildly surprised, but also not. Like Foster Griffin is probably the big name He was the 28th overall pick in 2014, the compensation pick for Irvin Santana way back when. He's never really gotten it going since joining the Royals. But the thing is, you know, he's left-handed. He's a left-handed pitcher, and he definitely has that talent that you know, got him to go in the supplemental round. So I think that's somebody that a team could probably find a spot in a bullpen for. So he may get selected. There's a lot of prospect writers who are pretty high on him as kind of an intriguing arm. So I'm a little surprised they didn't protect him, but at the same time, you know, it's a numbers game, and it's like, it's a calculated risk. There's a pretty decent chance that a team won't take him. I mean, only 15 to 18 teams will bother picking anybody. So the Royals being one of those teams, and you kind of get an idea of maybe the teams later in that Rule 5 round, maybe they're not going to be trying. You know, maybe they're looking to contend a little bit more because they finished better last year. So it's calculated. They're figuring that, okay, maybe he'll slip through and we can keep him in the organization. Donnie DeWeese wasn't protected and kind of played pretty well last year and was looking like he might be able to get a shot at Omaha. But at the same time, the Royals have 97 outfielders available right now. So, you know, if what they have now after acquiring Brett Phillips and Brian Goodwin and Rosel Herrera is, you know, they feel better than DeWeese, which is should be correct. There's not much reason to protect him. And then the name that I kind of thought there'd be more angst and gnashing of teeth and clutching of pearls about was Frank Schwindel, who, you know, after a good year in 2017, last year played the whole year in Omaha and hit well again, 24 homers or 28 homers, I think. 24 homers, 38 doubles in Omaha. Solid year.
Yeah.
Not protected. So a team could take him. The thing is, if you look over the last 10 years of the Rule 5 draft, I think you can count on one hand the number of straight-up first baseman DH types that have been picked. Because you would have to keep him on your roster the entire year or return him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of those things where it's like, if he hits right away, that's great. You know, you look at Ryan O'Hearn. If you pick up a guy and he hits like Ryan O'Hearn past maybe that second week where O'Hearn just went ballistic on everything, great, you're fine. But if it's like you run into that you know, 1-for-25 stretch and you want to send him down, you can't.
Yeah.
It's a Rule 5 pick. You got to keep him. And there's not really a lot of outfield spots. I mean, he's played in the outfield, but, you know, you're not keeping him saying that he has flexibility to play the outfield.
No.
So I don't think he'll get picked again. He might, but okay. I mean, it's the same feeling I had last year was that, like, okay, fine. If someone takes him, they take him. Now, O'Hearn, you know, made me eat my words because, you know, he looked pretty real last year, those last couple months, but, you know, he still has to do that again, and Schwindel has to do it again, and Schwindel hasn't even gotten a glimpse at the big leagues. So, you know, there's a lot of questions there, and I think a lot of teams will pass him up. So it's not a concern to me, but I expected a bigger outcry. But maybe you know, some of the more casual fans have kind of either they're not paying attention the same, or they kind of figured out last year that, oh, okay, it's fine. No one picked him last year. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
And he probably will. He'll probably be in Omaha hitting third next season. So, and all will be fine. And then we, you know, hopefully he hits well and can DH for a bit. But, you know, that's a long time in the future. But those were the interesting names that kind of were left off the 40-man roster that might get picked in about 2 weeks from now when the winter meetings start up. Or actually when they finish up.
So I concur on the Staumount evaluation in terms of just that the Royals, he would almost certainly get picked. I think the Royals looked at him and they were like, okay, if he was unprotected on somebody else's roster, we would probably take a chance on him. So
yeah.
if the Royals were willing to do that, then there were certainly other teams that would have been willing to take him from the Royals. So they did the smart thing and kept him protected. Yeah. Now the Deweys thing was a little surprising as well, because you know it seemed like they made the trade for him and they thought that he was. I mean, it's not like they were super attached to him or anything, but they were like, they thought, okay, we can have a productive player out of this guy. He can, you know, give us some solid innings at the major league level. But, you know, and maybe they still think that, and they're just assuming he won't get picked. But, you know, it's always kind of hard to judge with the Rule 5 stuff, because especially with how you talked about Schwindel. I mean, I think the best point you made there that's completely relevant is that he's a first baseman, and the idea of taking a first baseman in the Rule 5 draft is not one that would be thought of highly by most. So just because of what you mentioned, you know, if most...
Yeah, it's like 75% of the time it's a pitcher, and of the remaining 25%, it's usually an outfielder or utility guy.
Yeah,
and
because
first baseman is like, it's literally like five in the last 10 years.
Yeah, because there's the only people typically that play first base at that level are usually because they don't have any other position. You know, occasionally you get someone like an Eric Hosmer who's really athletic and he just happened to be a really good first baseman. I'm certain he could have, at least in the outfield, you know, had he played that for his entire career leading up to being in the majors, he would have been a very, you know, serviceable, if not pretty good outfielder, certainly. So, but
well, yeah, maybe when they looked at him, he sure wasn't
that
good.
Yeah, I mean, but he'd been playing first.
If he'd played it more, yeah.
But if he'd been playing since he was 16 every day in the outfield, he probably would have been better to where he'd be serviceable.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking your Ryan O'Hearns, your Prince Fielder types, those players that it's like, you know, there's really no place else for them to go. And so I think the Royals are kind of betting on that a little bit with the Swindell thing, because I feel like
it's a decent bet to make. I mean, if they didn't take him when he was entering age 26, he's now going to be turning 27 in June. So, I mean, it's like clock's ticking.
Yeah. Yeah, and the sometimes I wonder, you know, how gun shy the Royals are after everything that happened with like a Akila Kaihue type, where I don't know if the Royals are necessarily depending on him too much or at all, but I think they had a little bit invested in them, and then the fan reaction, I think they were kind of hoping for something, and then just nothing ever happened. But so right. I don't know if they're like, okay, well, let's not, you know, put too many eggs in any sort of a basket like that. Swindell's been having, you know, Kaihue had some really good AAA seasons, and you never seem to know what's going to happen. So,
yeah. And so, O'Hearn had some rough times in AAA and came out and was a monster for 6 weeks, basically. So, you know, just you never know. And that uncertainty, I think, also kind of lends itself towards, you know, a guy like Schwindel, who wasn't even like on the map until two seasons ago, it's fair to be skeptical that he would be able to do anything at the big league level. He might. He very well might. He might get picked up, hit 330 homers next season for some team, and they got a find. But, you know, odds are probably not. You know, it's a fair gamble. And if the Royals, you know, if it doesn't work out, well, they've got Ryan O'Hearn. They've got Hunter Dozier. They've got options there. They could always go sign somebody if they needed to. They can rotate the DH spot all they want. I mean, they've got plenty of guys who can kind of fill those spots right now. Not to say that, hey, it's cool if they lose Schwindel, but it's just like it's not crippling. The odds that he's like a superstar that the Royals let
like
go for free are pretty
like
low.
If they would just not protect Mondesi or something, that you'd be like, what the hell is wrong with the Royals? Whoever is making that decision deserves to be fired.
Right, exactly.
But we're not in that territory. So, and, you know, with that, we're, as we kind of inch forward, there's all these kind of touchstones of the offseason, kind of milestones, if you will. Maybe milestone would probably be a better word, but for, you know, putting people on the 40-man, and then you get, you know, free agency is started, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, next we have making decisions on tender offers for eligible players. So the Royals, you know, a couple, few names that, Mike, you noted that are the kind of the big names for the – actually, I say big names, but as big as type of names can be. Brian Flynn, Chester Cuthbert, and Jesse Hahn. So all kind of fit that mold of, you know, nice player to have. You know, you're not over the moon, but you're not just like, oh, you know, it's not Ross Glode. You know, I mean, it's not quite that territory yet with these players, but it's all, you know, you're not like, oh.
Keila Kaihui and Ross Glode in the same episode?
This is like the old days.
Damn. Just
dropping all kinds of names.
Man. Just since you mentioned him, my favorite Ross Glode memory is, I don't even know what damn year it was. It was one of, yeah, a stupid, dumb year where it had to be Hillman. Hillman had to be the manager at this point. I don't remember when Ross Glode played there, but I remember they had Mark Tian playing first and because Ross Glode playing right field, whereas all year long, Ross Glode's a first baseman who can play the outfield. Mark Tian is a third baseman who ended up in the outfield because Alex Gordon. And yet ends up playing first base. And wouldn't you know it, there's a pop fly that they both miss that lands between them in some game where the Royals are getting their heads beat in. And it's just like, why do you have them in these positions? It's just, oh God, Ross Glode. Anyway.
That was your trip down memory lane. Segment.
God, it still bugs me. I'm going to be 70 years old and it's still going to annoy me. It didn't even matter. It's just like, it's just such an easily avoided
decision. I remember, but
anyway,
just having conversations with
things I hold
friends
on to.
In college with the Royals about the Royals at that time. And it's just, it's like the Royals are, the problem was, so right now, we're going to go off on this tangent because why not? But right now, you know, the Royals put Ryan O'Hearn out there, and he did pretty well last year. But assuming if Ryan O'Hearn, you know, hopefully this doesn't happen, but if Ryan O'Hearn, somebody, whoever you want it to be, ends up just sucking horribly, you know, you can at least be like, okay, the Royals are trying something. They're trying to rebuild, et cetera. The problem with the time was the Royals, like, they were never truly in that rebuilding mode.
No,
and so
they
were
to
trying
rebuild
to,
with.
They were, well, that too. Yeah. But they were trying to like piece together some sort of competitive team, and yet they were trotting out guys like Ross Glode all the time. And it was like, that was the most disheartening thing as a fan, when you're like, you know, okay, you go out and sign Jose Guillen, like, he's awful, but at least you're trying to make something with a player that's got some level of talent. You know, Mike Jacobs, similar scenario. But when you're trying to say, hey, we're making an effort to be competitive, and you're putting Ross Glode out on the field, those are two conflicting ideals there. You can't have one and have the other. It's not working. So
signing Ross Glode is like going to Thanksgiving and it's an all vegan menu.
Yeah, like what the hell?
He's socks for Christmas.
Socks, toe socks, no less.
Ross Glode. It's like, I see what you're trying, but nobody wants that.
No. Nobody wants, nor does anybody deserve that.
No, Ross Glode, man.
Ross Glode. Well, there we go. Now that we've had that tangent, we can get back on track to the tender offers. So, I mean, you hear those names, and it's just like, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked one way or the other if the Royals offered or if they didn't offer. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the most likely to, I mean, one, I think they'll probably keep all three because, yeah, might as well. Flynn pitched okay most of the time last year, covered 75 2/3 innings, kind of mixed up roles. He was a long guy a couple times. He was pitching in late inning situations at times. you know, wasn't like, you know, blow him away good, but he was okay. He was fine.
Serviceable.
Sure. Yeah. He was a reasonable lefty with some experience and maybe a tick of upside. Totally fine. First year of arbitration, probably not going to, you know, command much more than $1 million and change. Which, I mean, yeah, that's a lot. I'll take it. But, you know, yeah, for baseball,
in baseball terms, that's nothing.
That's hardly anything. You know, so he's the easy one. I'm pretty sure they would keep him, but you know, he's also kind of been that guy when you think about, oh, they got to make a 40-man move. He's also kind of been that guy. Whereas, you know, Scott Alexander used to be that guy and Ramon Torres used to be that guy and what have you. But, I think he's probably an easy one to keep around. Jesse Hahn, you know, tore his UCL last year. He's probably not coming back till this summer. It's definitely possible that they wouldn't tender him, but if they feel that the upside that he might offer is worth enough, you know, that would be something where they would still have a couple years of team control for him. So if he spends this whole year rehabbing, they would still have the you know, the 2020-2021 season with him available and relatively cheap, still under arbitration, but, you know, not a whole lot. You know, by the end of that, he might be making $5 million. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those gambles that if they feel like they can do it, they might as well. And, you know, it's not like they have to keep him around. It's just a matter of, you know, how to manage the roster. So they might just offer it just to kind of keep him around. They can always put him on the 60-day DL once, you know, it comes time to hit spring training and get that roster crunch out of the way. So he's an easy guy to stash. And again, first year of arbitration, so he'll be pretty cheap. Cuthbert might be kind of running out. The one thing that kind of works for him is that they don't have a ton of depth at third base. I mean, Hunter Dozier's probably going to be starting out there. Unless Mike Moustakas returns again, maybe. I doubt it, but you know, I think the Cardinals are probably going to get him. But, you know, that puts the Royals in a position where it's like, okay, well, that's probably Hunter Dozier, but they could use a backup. The trick with Cuthbert is that he's out of options. So, you know, it's basically he would be making the team, and you've got a DH/first baseman/third baseman. Not really a great opportunity for him to get at bats, but last year they came out of the gate saying they wanted to get him 500 at bats. So as recently as last season, they felt pretty confident in what he could do and wanted to give him the opportunity. So, for, again, it's probably $1 million, you know, maybe $1 million, maybe 1.5 for him, because he's got, you know, that 2016 season hanging out. There's very little risk in any of these guys. What it might come down to is just if they feel that they can actually like manage the roster with them on it, because it would make it a full 40-man roster. They've come out and said that they want to find a middle infielder for their bench. They don't really have a backup shortstop right now, so they definitely could use that. They don't want to bring Nicky Lopez up yet to do that. And you can tell they didn't add him to the 40-man roster, so they're not really looking at him just yet to fill that role. And they probably still want to take a look at a couple of bullpen arms and maybe even a starter. So, and then there's the Rule 5 draft, and they're in a perfect position to take someone in the Rule 5 draft and see if they can, you know, hit on Brad Keller again. You know, they took a shot. They took two lottery tickets last year, and Birch Smith did not work out. Brad Keller was really, really good and looks, you know, mostly for real. I mean, every time you started to doubt him, he just went out and had another good start. So, you know, if they can make lightning strike twice, they're going to take a shot at it. So if they need to find a way to clear a spot, Cuthbert's probably the most likely, I would say, to end up, you know, being left off. But I'm pretty reasonably comfortable saying that they'll probably keep them all. They have till Friday to make the offer to them, and then, you know, it just comes down to getting the salary down before, you know, the end of February, which it's going to be one of those things where none of these guys can really make too big of an offer. So I can't really imagine it being too tough of a process. But yeah, I would rank them Flynn, Hahn, Cuthbert. Flynn, I would almost guarantee is going to get tendered a contract. Hahn and Cuthbert, 80% comfortable with them. So, but I honestly wouldn't be that surprised if, you know, any of those three weren't offered, just because there is a roster crunch. And in the case of Cuthbert, it's like, do you really have a spot to play him? Maybe, maybe not. You know, there's certainly no way to stash him if he doesn't hit well right away, or if you want to get him regular at bats or something. So those are the concerns that they have to be thinking about. But, you know, I do figure that they'll probably bring all three back and offer them contracts. And then, you know, you see how it develops in spring training and kind of go from there. It could also make someone like Flynn or Cuthbert like a trade candidate down the line too. So, you know, if they just let them go, you don't get any of that opportunity. But if you bring them on, well, you know, now you can at least bump them over to another team that, you know, might trade you somebody who's not on a 40-man roster spot and maybe has some upside or is even on a similar, you know, kind of career path. So you might be able to take advantage of that. But I bet they're all coming back.
Yeah, and that's the thing with this group of players. You know, when you see the names, it's like, okay, if I sat down and talked to somebody for 5 minutes about each of them, you could convince me in 5 minutes that it's a good idea that the Royals tender him, and then you could convince me that it's makes sense that they just let him go. So, I all things considered, I think they probably will bring him back, but I'm not going to bet money on right. such a thing one way or the other.
And I wouldn't think be upset in either case, you know, even though I've always liked Cuthbert. But I get it. I mean, he didn't hit well when he was healthy last year, and he had a lot of back issues most of the season, and he didn't really do much in 2017 either. So, you know, it's...
I mean, I feel like I always tell the story, but he was kind of the first major prospect that, when I was doing the prospect stuff for you back at Kings of Kauffman, like, he was the first prospect that I kind of saw come on the scene out of nowhere, because by the time I started writing, you know, Moose and Haas and all those players, they were already well known at that point. But Cuthbert had, you know, nobody really knew who he was, and so I, you know, did a lot of research on him and stuff, and talked to a lot of scouts about him and found out what they liked and didn't like. And, you know, so I've always had a soft spot for Chester Cuthbert. But yeah, I mean, at some point you got to get the results, and, you know, he's gotten some. But he's also not gotten some when given an opportunity. So I don't think the Royals are ready to close the door on him, but I also don't think they're ready to put too much effort into keeping that door open, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, if they can, like you said, if it ends up being $1 million, $1.5 million, I mean, that's nothing to a baseball team. So certainly no risk there. Mm-hmm. But if it's trying to get, you know, more than that, or trying to get sort of stipulations or whatever, then it's might be like the Royals are like, oh, just take your chances, and if you can't find anybody, we'll talk or something.
Yeah.
So I don't. But so let's see what else we got here. Kind of an odds and ends episode, as we mentioned at the beginning. So we're just kind of trying to cover all the stuff that's been coming up since we've last recorded. What else we have? That's something else we wanted to talk about.
Really, that, kind of it. Well, I mean,
and we mentioned last week that we were going to start talking about prospects, and we're not quite ready to do that. Still gonna do a little bit more research and let some more lists and different things of the off season come out. So we've got plenty of time, and we'll certainly get to the prospect discussion, but we're going to wait on that a little bit so that we can get a little bit more research in there, so that, you know, we're giving you guys actual good information and opinions and such. So we'll talk to Clint and do some research on our own and see if and get some more good prospect info lined up.
Let a few of them update too. Cause some list that I was looking at is like, they haven't really updated since August.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's fine. I get it. But it's like, I don't have the input that, I want to consult. But we'll get there.
Certainly.
We're still playing our own catch up on prospects because it's kind of like, we spent so much time before the Royals won the World Series, and since, it's always been kind of like the thing that escapes us, which we're lucky we have Clint. Clint steers us in the right direction quite a lot. So
certainly.
That guy just talks to everybody in the organization who will listen to him.
Dude's a prospect machine.
Yep. So he's, we probably just ought to have him on and have him go, frankly.
We should, yeah. Maybe we'll talk to him and see if he wants to come on like he did after the draft.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this week. So with that, we'll leave you. I hope you we were remiss to not even say happy Thanksgiving to everyone, even though it's late. But I hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving. And, as we have a good holiday season, as we we'll have more shows before the real holidays hit, of course. But it's getting to be that time of year. So we hope it's going well for everybody so far. And that everyone stayed safe in this snowstorm out here in Kansas City for those that are living around town. It was pretty, especially Monday, as Mike, having had to go into work. It was pretty treacherous to get out there. At about 4 o'clock, we finally decided to venture outward. We had some things we had to pick up at the store, so we went over there and we got something to eat because we had been cooped up in the house all day. And the roads were drivable, but it was not a pleasant experience by any means.
Right.
So I can't imagine, earlier that morning, they must have been pretty bad. Though you have the benefit of living in Kansas, where they tend to take care of their roads slightly better.
Which is kind of ironic given the gubernatorial situation a couple years ago. But anyway.
But yeah, that's neither here nor there.
I don't know where they found the money for that, but okay.
But anyway, so hopefully everyone that stayed safe and continues to stay safe, as we're supposed to get some more snow this weekend. So I don't think it'll be quite as bad. It's not, but everyone stay safe and stay warm and stay tuned in to the Royals by visiting our sponsors, of course, Baseball BP Kansas City. From Baseball Perspectives, where we talk about Clint all the time, but he's putting up stuff there constantly. We tell you David Leske, Craig Brown, everyone is just putting out the content. No off season for BPKansasCity.com. So be sure to check there to get some more Royals fix. If you're missing that weekly episode of the KC Baseball Vault, which we will be back to once the season starts, but we got a little while on that. So visit there to get your Royals fix. And of course, if you're trying to stay warm, I'm sure Kelly's Westport Inn has a bevy of hot alcoholic drinks that you can take or that you can order, and that you could take up to their heated rooftop deck, which is one of my favorites parts of Kelly's. So be sure to give them a visit as well if you're heading out, if you're braving the cold to head out and have some drinks, meet some friends, whatever the case may be. But that's it for us. So see you in a couple weeks. We'll be right in the middle of the winter meetings, as they will. And that is sort of the as formal as you can get for a non-existent season like the hot stove season. That is the formal kickoff to hot stove season.
We're in the time trials right now. And
yes,
the actual event is in 2 weeks.
So hopefully there's usually a lot of news just kind of coming out left and right. So it'll be interesting. And there's a lot of still got Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, all those free agents are out there. There's going to be some news on them, certainly. That's usually when those dominoes start to fall, is after those meetings. So things will pick up and it'll be that's always a fun time. And we have Michael Engel, internet detective, out there to keep everybody honest.
Hadn't been that bad the last couple of years. Like last 4 years just hadn't really popped up that people have become vigilant. They have learned.
I was about to say, Twitter has saturated itself to the point now where I think people are aware of what's going on, and people are actually distrusting almost to a fault, I think, sometimes now, which is, That's the way it's been, but it's good that people are not just ready to believe anybody.
Well, the thing they always say is if your mother says that she loves you, be sure to get a second source.
Indeed. Don't tell my daughter that. But
I wouldn't.
All right. Well, with that, we'll leave you. So we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Hopefully have some fun stuff to talk about. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. We love you all. Couldn't do this show without you. Thank you all so much. See you next time. And until then, as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Meyer at the wall, leaping off his glove. It rolls on the wall, and look at Ross Gloe keeping the ball in play and preventing a three-run home run.